Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. This week, we have Chardonnay Day. Chardonnay is one of the most important grapes, and a lot of the wines that use Chardonnay, people don't even think of them as Chardonnay wines. We wanted to talk about one of our favorite wines that uses Chardonnay, which is Chablis. So on the podcast, Claire Cope and I are going to talk to Christian Moreau, a very famed winemaker in the Chablis region of Burgundy, and he is going to break down everything top to bottom of this incredible wine. Before we do that, I want to tell everybody we have an all-new original film coming only to SOM TV May 31st called The Oyster Farmer. And speaking of Chablis, one of my favorite things to eat with this wine is oysters. This film covers everything, the history, the culinary uses, all the ecology. It is an incredible look. So if you're an oyster fanatic, this film is for you. And if you're not, you're going to find out what all the fuss and why so many people are so obsessed with this food. If you're not a SOM TV subscriber, get SOM TV for a limited time for 50% off an entire year. Go to SOMTV.com, enter the code 50OFF, 50OFF at SOMTV.com and get it for an entire year for $25. That is a very, very good deal. And if you are a subscriber, this episode will be available to watch next week on SOM TV. So after you listen, you'll want to see Christian and see everything we're talking about. Without further ado, Christian Moreau, Claire Cope on Chablis. Chablis is one of these things that really was like one of the major wines that made me understand how much I could love wine and also how misunderstood wine was. Do you love Chablis as much as I do?
I do. I do truly love Chablis. I would say that it's a wonderful way to taste a misunderstood grape as well. That's what I love Chablis as, this representative of a grape that maybe necessarily doesn't always get the love and attention it deserves.
I mean, Chardonnay, I almost feel like I've gone back and forth on this because Chardonnay is incredibly misunderstood due to a lot of, I don't want to say bad Chardonnay being made, but mostly just a lot of it being made.
I mean,
we could go down a rabbit hole. I don't want to do it, but we should mention, you know, obviously Chardonnay is in Champagne. Chardonnay is in many, many other different wines that are not called Chardonnay. And so Chardonnay is an incredibly good grape. And when a lot of people say, I don't like Chardonnay, they're not thinking of
They haven't had their aha moment with Chardonnay.
Yes, exactly. And they may never have it. So I'm not here to persuade people to love Chardonnay. I am here to say that Chablis is one of the most formative wines I've ever drank. It's one that I continue to go back to. I wish it wasn't getting as expensive as it was.
Yeah.
I sound like an old man, but like when we made Somme 1, it wasn't expensive. Ravino Chablis and Dovisat and these names that sommeliers know were not expensive wines 14 years ago. And now another very, very, very expensive. So a little bit ago, I was in Chablis and I interviewed a very talented winemaker with a deep family past in the region named Christian Moreau. Now, I want to say something about Christian Moreau. He basically is like the mayor of Chablis in a way that is kind of like almost like a very nice, gentle gangster. He is one of the funniest, most vulgar, hilarious, kind people I can name in the wine business. We got there at about 9 p.m. in Chablis to film, and you can look at our closer look at Chablis with Christian Moreau on SOM TV right now. But when we got there, we were all hungry. It was like 9 or 10 p.m., and if you've ever been in rural France, and Chablis is about as rural as you can get, it's an island. There is nothing around it but vines, tiny little town. He called somebody up and made them open up a restaurant for us, and the restaurants close at like 7:30 p.m.
And they must have been so pissed.
I think Christian was like, he holds some power in the town of Chablis. And so on today's pod and today's conversation, we're going to go through and I'm going to pull the interview from Christian Moreau and he's going to talk. We're going to go deep on Chablis, you know, all the things, the soil, how it's made, some serious opinions. But first, I have to get an elephant out of the room. Our parents' generation effed up Chablis so bad in the United States that I don't know that it will ever truly recover for the older generations, because when they hear Chablis, they think jug wine, California Chablis. Yeah. It's one of the, you look at Champagne and how hard they protect that brand and they don't want anyone else to call it Champagne. Well, this is the reason, because California Chablis is essentially, if you work in a restaurant, you've walked past the cooking box wine that's called Chablis that they use to make their chicken piccata or whatever. you know, and that's not Chablis. It's just
not. It's not. It does a disservice to the region of Chablis that's been making these beautiful, beautiful wines for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes.
It was the same thing. Like we were calling, you know, sparkling wine champagne, and then champagne cracked down on it. But there are some regions that haven't been able to lock it down quite so much. Legally, you've got, you know, sherry, port. There are a lot of those that they're like, oh, there's sherry, there's port. And you look at the bottle and you're like, this is from California. This is not. No.
Right.
And the same thing with Chablis, which isn't even, by the way, made from Chardonnay. Typically, like maybe there's a little bit in there, but it's kind of just this like jungle juice. Like, oh, here's some Chenin, Colombard, freaking like Thompson seedless grapes just all thrown together. So, I mean, call it jug wine, but calling it the equivalent of this incredible expression of a single grape from France is like, it's just, it's rude.
It's not very fair. Yeah, it's not very fair. Really, really quick on the history of Chablis. This region at one point, it's kind of one of these wine regions that's very fascinating because it's gone in and out of style. It's something that was very, very, very popular. It was the most important white wine in Europe for a very long time. And there's a reason for that. There's a river there. And at one point, Burgundy was one of the most influential and powerful kingdoms and areas of France. France, as we think of it now, was not something that has always existed. It was many different states and mini kingdoms and things like that. But Chablis was on a river. And it was easy to transport these barrels to places like Bordeaux, Paris. If you go to Paris still to this day, often, you know, at any of the little places where you're going to get wine and food, you're going to find Chablis as the white and you're going to find Beaujolais as the red. And there's reasons for this because it's steeped in history.
And Chablis is also a lot closer to Paris than the Côte d'Or. It's way further north.
Exactly, way further north. So it went in and out of style and it was very popular. And then it became this wine that sort of, it didn't fall out of favor. It just became harder to get because other wine regions started producing whites and, you know, so it's gone through an ebb and flow. And right now it's at a crest where it's very expensive, very sought after, but it's very boutique. It's no longer producing such a large scale. What I want to do here is I'm going to go to Christian Moreau and I want to hear him. This is a great way to set his character, him talk about California Chablis and what that is in his opinion to the comparison of French Chablis.
I can recall about 25 years ago, I was in San Francisco at Davis University. I was with some other Chablisien grower, and we're making a seminar, you know, and in the assembly, some student asked me, said, Monsieur Moreau, what do you think about the Chablis from California? I said, first, it's not Chablis. Chablis, it's a village, and it's a wine made in France. The jug wine that you make in California is a real shit. And I did add, what would you think if in France a person decide to name a bottle of Chablis or, you know, Burgundy and put it Coca-Cola style or something like this? I mean, we end up in jail right away. And on the first row was Monsieur Ernest Gallo, actually. He was also listening. And at the end, we had a nice cocktail and he come by beside me, he said, ah, Monsieur Moreau, nice talking, but there's nothing you can do. But on the other hand, for the late 4, 5, 6 years, because you have a lot of journalists, you know, in the US, in England, who are talking about Chablis, explaining what is Chablis, doing seminar about Chablis. If you want to drink Chablis, it must come from that tiny village, you know, in the northern part of Burgundy. So the trend for false Chablis, it's moving away.
I mean, this just gives you an idea of kind of the way Christian talks. Christian is a now his son has now taken over the wine, and I think he spends a lot of his time definitely having a say in how the wine is made. But he does a lot of skiing and stuff like that, so he can have these opinions that are quite strong. This is nothing against like Ernest and Giulio Gallo jug wine. It just isn't Chablis. It's just not.
So, it's not fair to call it that.
It's just not. So for all of you wine people, and maybe people who are just passively interested in wine, I think it's important to try to understand the region itself, where it's located, and what it is. So I asked Christian to give us kind of an intro on Chablis from a perspective as a winemaker there that's been there multi-generations. Let's hear Christian talk about Chablis and what it's about.
We are in Chablis. Chablis is, of course, part of Burgundy. We always call it Golden Gate of Burgundy. Chablis, it's a village. It's a wine, but it's a village. It's a village of 2,500 people, And 100% of the people live because of the wine of Chablis. The wine of Chablis is made with Chardonnay, of course. 100% Chardonnay, there is only one variety, roots, Chardonnay. Chablis, it's special, it's mineral, it's flinty, you know, it's a Chardonnay, but it's not a Meursault. Meursault are great wine, it's not a problem. But we are not exactly the same. So if you use ourselves, you know, at the domain, let's say for the Premier Cru and the Grand Cru, between 35 to 50% of the vine is vinified, fermented in oak, but 2% of new oak. We use 1, 2, 3, 4 years old barrel. We don't want the oak to overpower. The oak can bring a certain richness, you know, but we don't want the oak to take advantage of the wine.
Claire, when you were studying and serving, is it hard to make people understand? I'm going to have Christian kind of go through the hierarchy of the appellations and all of the ways Chablis is organized, but what was your experience in trying to communicate to a diner?
That they need to be drinking Chablis,
no, even just though they hate Chardonnay. Because Chablis has different, like most wines in France and many in the world, there's different classifications. And so was it confusing to make people understand kind of this Chablis is more expensive for this reason?
Honestly, I think people are pretty receptive to that and pretty understanding of why these things can get so expensive, especially once you break it down for them and understand like they're not making much of it. A lot of the vines can be pretty old, so they're not producing a lot of juice. The way in which it's made is very hands-on. So you know, you've got a whole huge team that you have to hire and all these hands touching it. You guys explain it pretty well, actually, in Psalm 2, Into the Bottle, where I believe Brian McClintock talks about like a lot of people are uncomfortable spending over $20 on a bottle of wine, but there's a reason that it's that price. It's not just people being like, screw you. Well, yeah. Maybe when you get up to some of the cult wines, yeah.
Another topic. Kind of
because we can. But I found, though, that there are some ways into Chablis that aren't super expensive. There are some producers like Patrick Pughes is one that comes to my mind, William Fevre, that have really nice intro-level Chablis that are typical of the region, typical of that style, and a great intro to that. And especially working in wine bars, you can kind of just more delicately shove it down their gullet because you can give people tastes. And I mean, I would do that in restaurants as well. You always give people tastes so that they can see what they're missing out on. And Chablis is such a wonderful format for that. I know a lot of Psalms that, you know, it's a very kind of joked about thing where people are like, I hate Chardonnay. And we're like, have some Chablis because it's just that clean, flinty, high acid, you know, the fruit's not quite as ripe as you're going to find in warmer regions. And a lot of the time, especially when you have those intro Chablis, those intro level Chablis, they're stainless steel. They're not really using much oak influence. But even when you get to the Grand Crus and some Premier Crus that are using a little bit of oak, it's old. So you're not getting the butter. You're not getting, you know, the vanilla oak balm that I think people associate with Chardonnay.
I think it's important to have Christian kind of run through the different appellations and kind of how Chablis is structured, because it's one of, in my opinion, one of the easier understood regions in France, because some of them can get quite, I mean, Burgundy as a whole, might as well. I mean, don't tattoo any Burgundy stuff on your body because it's going to change in like, you know, 6 months.
It.
So I know we all have that regret. So I asked Christian to kind of go through the appellations and talk about what Grand Cru means, Premier Cru, and the different levels of Chablis.
It was in 1938 when the INAO, l'Institut des Appellations d'Origine Contrôlée, decided, you know, to make a selection. And this was delimited in 1938 or 1939. This was going to be the Grand Cru, you know, the Premier Cru, the Chablis, delimitation of Chablis also. You know, that was done in 1938 for the Grand Cru. And they had a new delimitation also in 1997 for the Chablis and certain Premier Cru. But, you know, you cannot, there's one thing. You have a delimitation for all the appellations. You cannot plant vineyard if you don't have the appellation. In Chablis, you have to understand, we do have four different appellations. We have some Petit Chablis. Petit Chablis usually in the back of the hill and also in a village surrounding Chablis. you have 20 villages surrounding Chablis, and that's where most of the Chablis village and the Petit Chablis is brought up. After that, you have Premier Cru with roughly 40 different climate names. On my right over there, Premier Cru Montée de Tonnerre, Mont de Milieu. On the left, one of the famous Premier Cru Fourchaume, called Fourchaume. And in my back, you have some Vaillon, Montmain, Premier Cru Lélis. And the Grand Cru, you have 7 different climate names. There's only one Grand Cru with 7 different. Blanchot, right here, we are in the middle of l'Éclos. On the left, you have Valmure, Grenouille, Vaudésir, Bougreau, Lépreuse.
One of the really special things about Chablis, I think, is the climate. And in a lot of cases, the word terroir is kind of tossed around a lot in wine. And Chablis is one of those regions where it's really, really, really easy and finite to understand. And it really does matter. You have this incredibly cool climate because of how northerly it is. It's like way, way, way. I mean, if you look at Burgundy, it's almost one of those things where you're like, is this really part of Burgundy? It couldn't be more different than the Mâcon, you know, which is also part of Burgundy. So it's a very fascinating thing for what you can do with a grape. Let's hear Christian talk about the climate as an idea.
It's a cooler place than Côte du Rhône or Beaujolais. Yes, definitely. You know, it's cooler. It's cooler, and that's why make Chablis so special, you know. That mineral flavor that you get, you know, that light acidity that you have. I'm not talking about aggressivity. I'm talking about acidity. That's also because we are on the northern part of Burgundy. We have a cooler air. Yes.
How would you, I want to compare and contrast the way you would describe Chablis tasting with the way Christian would describe it. How would you describe Chablis as a, because I know that there's very different kinds and a little new oak usage and things on different varieties, but what would you say Chablis tastes like?
So, like I mentioned before, the fruit notes are going to be a lot leaner and less ripe than somewhere warmer that Chardonnay vines are growing. So instead of like a super ripe, juicy, or even let's say baked or desiccated yellow apple, you've got a like very tart, underripe one, like a Granny Smith, like very, you know, acidic. I've always found there to be this kind of Parmigiano-Reggiano kind of cheese rind quality to it, which sounds weird, but it's like just the savoriness. My old wine director at Republique used to say, that like, but he would say it was a Parmigiano-Reggiano like sweet tart, like a green sweet tart with Parm.
Which I can see that. That's interesting. I can see that for sure.
And then there's a lot of citrus, and then there is this flintiness that a lot of people talk about, this gunpowder note that's very unique to Chablis, and that has a lot to do, I think, with the soil type and this chalkiness as well, because you have all this Kimmeridgian soil and Portlandian limestone that have all these crushed seashells because Chablis used to be the ocean floor, basically. So it's these fossilized seashells. So you get this chalkiness and sometimes this kind of brininess as well, which I think that saltiness with the Parm note I mentioned. This flintiness, gunpowder. I remember reading the Wine Bible when I was first studying, and Karen McNeil described that, and I'm like, well, shit, I have to try that. And it was there. It was awesome.
It's very unique in Chablis, the way the wine is actually made. And this is where, you know, we get a little geeky here. But for those of you who collect, and if you're going to spend, now you can get Chablis for $26 a bottle, but you can also get Chablis for $900 a bottle if you wanted to. Sadly, that is a recent phenomenon, by the way. I think if you're going to pay that kind of money, or maybe you're a wine buyer for a celebrity and you're going to pay that, or, you know, you're going to buy it for them, but they're going to pay that kind of money, you should at least know how it's made. And so I wanted Christian to talk about the vinification of Chablis and kind of what makes it stand out differently and what makes it unique.
Well, oak, you know, this is something make me laugh, you know, when I can read the new mode of oak in Chablis. This is pure bullshit. You know, in the old time, I can remember my father, 90% of the wine were brought up in oak. Not new oak, I agree. It was actually Demi-Muy, 600 liter or 228 liter, and sometime Lafayette. And we also that tank, concrete tank. But oak is not a new mud. It always exists in Chablis. The new mud is stainless steel tank, who come into effect in the late 70s, when the vineyard of Chablis start to grow, you know, and that's when people start to buy stainless steel tank. But oak is not a mud. It always exists in Chablis, and you have to be careful, you know. You have to be careful in the sense that to avoid the oak to overpower the minerality, the typicity of Chablis.
Now, Claire, you talked about the soil, which is really fascinating. I mean, I would say that Chablis has more in common with Champagne from a soil standpoint than it does with Burgundy, which is a lot of limestone and a lot of clay, frankly. And so it's very different than your typical Burgundian soil. I mean, it's apples and oranges. It's very, very important to hammer in just how much of an effect that has on the wine. So back to Christian on talking about the soil.
Yeah, well, the soil in Chablis, you know, it's made of limestone, you know, nearly 100% in certain area, like this area. Also, you know, in the back, you go in a Premier Cru Vaillant, you know, that's the soil that we have. In Chablis, yes, it's nearly 80% Kimérygien. But as you go down, you know, if you go down to Côte d'Or, you know, Volnay, you can see that red dirt, you know, it has nothing to do with the... With us in Sancerre, you still have some Kimérygien, you know the kind of limestone soil, you know. But Chablis is very specific, you know. I mean, it's all the Grand Cru. I mean, the Chablis, but you have some Portlandien, of course, you know, with less chalk like this. But it's made of oyster shelf, right there. You can really see them.
So I'm looking right now, Claire, and it looks to be that you can get a Paul Masson Chablis, California Chablis, a 3-liter for $14.99 right now. I'm looking at it online.
Yeah. Got to get on that.
Yeah. So a double magnum is only $15 of California Chablis. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I want you, dear listener, I want you to get a double magnum of Paul Masson Chablis from California. And then I want you to get an entry-level Petit Chablis or just a Chablis. If you can afford something better, great, do it. But it doesn't matter. And taste these two damn things next to each other and understand that the Americans, we really have effed this whole thing up.
We did. Congratulations, you have a double magnum of Paul Masson Chablis left over.
You can enjoy it with your chicken piccata as a cooking wine if you'd like.
That's great. Though,
I tend to cook with wine that I also like to drink because, well, I mean, what's the point if you're cooking
you
if
cook
you're not drinking
Drabasaw?
At the same time? Yes, that's right. That's right. I'm in a very different tax bracket.
You're living a life.
I do not. Why don't we, aside from Christian Moreau's wines, which are, by the way, still one of the better deals. And one thing we didn't talk about is how well this ages. I want to dispel a myth that probably for you listening, the listeners of this podcast are very smart. So not you. But the people you're going to talk to when you become Chablis evangelists, white wine can age incredibly well. And some of my favorite wines I've ever, ever, ever had are older Chablis. They take on this, you know, whereas some Chardonnays can get very oxidized and very bruised apple type of thing. And then they turn and they really don't have a lot of food opportunities at that point.
Especially in the rest of Burgundy too, because that's a big issue with some older Burgundies from the Côte d'Or. But not Chablis as much.
Not Chablis. Chablis has the acid and the structure, and when it ages, it gains a complexity that is tremendous. If you're lucky enough to either find yourself with a bottle that's older, or you're, unlike me, able to hold on to a bottle and let it age for a bit, it's a tremendous experience. So, Claire, in honor of Chardonnay Day and Chablis, I clink a glass to you, and I want to say for everybody, give Chablis a chance, and if you have already given it many chances like us, just drink more of it, because it's fantastic. But don't tell too many people. I don't want the price to go up anymore.
No, Jason. It's not. It's over. It's over.
All right. I want to thank Christian Moreau, and I want to thank you, Claire, for joining.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Thank you.
Happy Chardonnay Day. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Really means a lot. If you love this podcast, do not forget. It means a lot to us if you go and wherever you listen, give us a good review. And do not forget about that 50% off annual offer from SomTV. SomTV.com, type in 50 off, 50OFF. This is going to end soon. And you'll want it because The Oyster Farmer comes out on the 31st of May. Brand new film. I want to thank John Adams, who produced this episode. Thank Claire and Christian Moreau for appearing. And thank all of you for listening. Everybody be safe. Enjoy a glass of Chardonnay, preferably Chablis if you're me. All right, talk soon.